Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio. This week, we're going to take a little bit different topic than we normally do. I mean, our show is about emergency preparedness. It's about dealing with disasters and situations that may not normally come up. But I think that there's a broader context, and I'd like to look at some of the things that are going to happen after we suffer a violent social, economic, or political collapse. And this is something that is not, I think, terribly likely in the next, you know, couple of years, but it's something that we should think about, and it's a good thought exercise. But in the broader context, we can see applications for this topic happening today. And the one that I want to discuss most is the immigration crisis that's going on right now in the U.S. and our southern border. And this is a hot topic. There are a lot of different radio shows talking about this. You've got conservative media outlets, you know, pounding, saying the president is shirking his duty and not doing his job defending our borders. You have liberal media outlets saying that this is a humanitarian crisis and children are suffering and dying and we're not doing anything about it. And in large part, I think that both are right. This is a humanitarian crisis and this is a border crisis. And this is both at the same time. And you can watch the powerful establishment go back and forth and try to shift blame around without actually accomplishing anything. But if we look at the root causes of it and what it means for us, I think that we can come to a more reasoned conclusion.
Yeah, you're right, Doug. And I think today, what you and I think we should do today during our show is solve this crisis and this problem between the two of us. We will take that information, we'll shift it over to Washington, let them know what to do. What do you think?
I think that that's a brilliant plan.
Yay. Okay, well, we'll see if we can come up with the answer by the end of the show.
The world will always be at a better place if they just listen to Ready Radio.
Right, yeah.
So we're looking at a large situation here. The changing demographics of the migrants, and I think this is migration, not immigration, and we'll talk a little bit about the difference there in a minute. But the changing demographics, it used to be that people who were illegally crossing the border were coming to the U.S. looking for better wages or political freedom. Usually political freedom was sought more through established channels, through the immigration system, because if you were in physical or political danger, you could seek asylum in this country. And then it was a fairly good shot at getting it if you could prove that you were facing, you know, physical harm or political repercussions for being returned to your home country. So most of the illegal immigration was coming from people who were looking for work. And the U.S. started a program where they did background checks on people getting normal paying jobs, and which forced most of the people who don't have credentials into kind of a gray market where they're working for wages that are under the table and not paying taxes and being able to take advantage of a lot of our social welfare system because of that, because they don't have any shown income or resources. So that's kind of the historical trend. And when we talk about, you know, illegal immigration, that's usually what people think about. But this crisis, what's going on right now, is vastly different. The U.S. has a treaty with both Canada and Mexico to deal with what's called unaccompanied minors. So you've got alien unaccompanied minors, or AUCs, and they are children under the age of 18 who reach the border, usually at a border crossing station, and say, I'm here by myself. I don't have anybody. What do you do with me? And the policy has been to protect them. We had, when President Bush was in office, he signed a law that said that we would take an unaccompanied minor if we don't have a agreement with their country, and we have an agreement with countries on both of our borders.
Mm-hmm. So which would make sense. Yeah.
This should take care of most of them, right? I mean, how many kids do you really have swimming across, you know, the Gulf of Mexico from Cuba to show up on Florida's shores and say, I need help?
That'd be quite an undertaking.
Yeah, yes. It doesn't happen very often, mm-hmm. is the theory.
Right.
So we have, when we don't have an agreement in place, we turn the children over to the Department of Health and Human Services to make sure that they are treated and healthy and cared for. And then we try to work out how to return them to their home if they're able to be returned to their home in a safe manner so that they're not going right back into the human trafficking, sex slave, or political environment where they're at danger of being executed, I mean, this makes perfect sense. The problem is that there are always unintended consequences. And when you create a law that says that we will take in your refugees, mm-hmm. suddenly parents all around these other countries said, well, let's get the kids to the U.S. Whatever it takes, let's just get the kids to the U.S. because they will be in a better place. I mean, it's the land of hope and opportunity. These are people who have never been here, never seen the country, do not know what it's like, but they just know. They know from all of the stories and, dare I say, propaganda, that the U.S. is the greatest nation on earth, the most powerful nation, the safest nation, and they want their children to go out of this misery that they're living in and have a new, successful, wonderful life in the U.S., even if it's alone. And so they're paying people to take their children and transport them from Honduras and Guatemala through Mexico to the U.S. border and drop them off. And these are sometimes rather young children. I mean, we're talking preteens and teenagers who are not savvy in the world, who don't know how to take care of themselves, who can't protect themselves against adults. And a lot of them end up starving. A lot of them end up killed. A lot of them end up in the sex traffic. And there's no way to regulate it because they're being transported illegally. There's no way to check up on them. The parents throw them to the wind and hope for a better life. It's like putting a message in a bottle and hoping that your children will be safe. So this denotes, there's two ways to look at this. One, you could say that the parents are being very callous and not caring about their children, and that may be for some instances. I mean, you can get to a point where you have too many kids and there's nothing to do, and what are you going to do with them? And this also ties into an economic or political collapse. So we'll talk about that in a minute as well. So there are some times when you're trying to get rid of children without harming them, but, you know, with the prospect that they'll be fine, go away. But then there's also people who are genuinely unable to care for their mm-hmm. children in their environment.
Yep.
And they hope that this will be a lifeboat for their child, even if they cannot join with them. And both of these are powerful, powerful emotions to deal with. Either that you cannot provide for your child and you want them to go to have a better life, or that you have too many children and you cannot provide that way. I mean, either way you're looking at it, this is a powerful decision to make. And here comes these orphans, really, these refugees to our border, and they're saying, what do you do with me? Now, a couple of years ago, the number of these cases that came to the U.S. borders was somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 a year. Which is an awful lot of kids. I mean, you think about how many people, excluding everybody in Canada, although I don't think there's a lot of Canadians trying to smuggle across the border, maybe a few. Alex Trebek might be here illegally, we don't know. But and Mexico. We exclude Canada and Mexico from these numbers. From the other countries, you know, the ones that border outside, you know, like Guatemala, Honduras, maybe Alaska, mm-hmm. I don't know. These countries, they're sending about 2,000 to 5,000 kids a year. When we changed the law and said that we were going to protect them, the number jumped. This year, we've had almost 50,000 so far. We're only in July. Wow. 50,000 up from 5,000.
Wow.
If the trend continues, next year they're projecting 90,000 children to show up on our border.
Mm.
Now, I've heard a lot of commentators start talking about, well, you know, this is an invasion. These kids aren't invading. This is my take on it. Kids are not coming here to invade. Kids are not coming here to vote for whatever political party that commentator is more afraid of. Kids are not coming here for those reasons. They're coming here because their parents said, go,
mm-hmm.
and they went. And they show up here and they say, now what? And we got to figure out something to do. Now, there's lots of solutions that can be proposed, but until we get to the root cause of why they're showing up, nothing matters. And you can put up as big a fence, a wall, a concrete pillar block house as you want along the border. But when they show up at that check station and they say, I'm from Guatemala, I have no one, what do you do with me? Do you shut the door and say, well, sit in that side of the line and die? Or do you say, we're going to do something with this? And how do you deal with it?
Yeah, well, you know, I was kind of hoping, Doug, that we would find an answer by the end of the show. And now, I'm not so sure. So thanks for all that.
Well, we try. There's I think there is an answer.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you. I mean, and just from what you're saying, obviously, from you know when it used to be between $2,000 to $5,000 children, $2,000 to $5,000children per year, and now they've grown exponentially. I mean, the reason that they're coming back is because it's working. The ones that were sent, you know, they weren't turned around and sent back. They were given the health care that they needed, and they were taken care of. So obviously, it's worked, and obviously that's why the numbers keep growing and is why it's going to continue to keep growing.
Well, I think that's true in part, but a lot of these people, this I don't think that this is so much. I heard an example the other day, earlier this week, there was some guy on the radio talking about if a bank robber gets arrested, then all the other bank robbers say, oh, well, let's not do that again. But I don't think that that's really a good example of what's going on here. Do you think that those parents in Guatemala who are putting their kids into the hands of a stranger to take to America know anybody who made it to America, who wrote back and said, hey, I've got a Jiffy Lube now and I'm doing fine and everything's great here in America? Do you really think that they're getting feedback, positive feedback from the kids who went before them? All they know is that they disappeared. They don't know if they died. They don't know if they ended up in a sex traffic. They don't know if they made it to an embassy. They don't know if they're in a foster home here in the U.S. They don't know anything. All they know is that they were thrown out into the wind, and they hope. And that's the problem here, is that these parents have hope in the U.S. that this will just work out, and they don't know. We're coming up on a commercial break. We'll talk a little bit more about this when we get back. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us. You're listening to Doug and Amy, and today we have a very interesting topic. It's a hot topic right now if you're listening to you know, the news and sort of seeing all this immigration with the children, teens and preteens coming across our borders. And when we left off, we were talking about hope in the U.S. And that's something I think we should delve into a little bit more, because on the outside, we are still, you know, seen and as you know, I mean, we're like the land of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that's where these parents want their children. And they have that hope still for them.
And what I was trying to bring up just before we went to the commercial break was there's this theory out there that these people are doing it because they know it works. And I don't think that's true. I don't think that they've ever gotten a response back from somebody who made it to the U.S. to say, yes, yes, it worked. We all made it fine. Now, the mules are probably coming back and saying, yeah, we get them up there all the time. Pay us the money and we'll take them up there. So they've got some sort of feedback that, you know, there is motion. But do they know? Do they really know that they made it? I don't think that I think that they hope. I think that these parents pray, but they have no knowledge. And when the kids get here, they have no way to reach back to contact them, no way to get in touch with them, no way to let them know that they're safe. So there's not a lot of positive reinforcement or security in this. So what this comes down to, this comes down to faith. This comes down to hope. These parents don't know what's going to happen to their children, but they are putting their message in the bottle to send towards the U.S. in this, like, belief that when they get there, they will be taken care of. Now, we can undermine that hope. We can put out a policy and we can start to make examples out of people and use the stick aspect to come in and say, yes, all you people out there living in Guatemala and Honduras, take note. The U.S. is going to do horrible things to children who show up on the border. We'll put them in internment camps and send them back to the nearest embassy and drop them off on some strange border with no help. We could do that, and with enough time and propaganda and effort, and we are going to have to get that message out there, we could undermine the hope in the U.S. and make people believe that the U.S. is no longer a land of prosperity and opportunity where people would want to come to. Is that really what we want to do? Is that really who Americans are? Is that what we want to be? I don't think so. I don't think that we want to undermine the hope of people around the world that American is a bastion of free will and opportunity and a place to come and prosper. And I see a lot of that mentality. And I think the mentality comes from the old aspect of looking at illegal immigration as people who are coming to take jobs. And that is not a new thought. That is not something that comes just from, you know, the last 20 years with people flooding across the border and being in the Home Depot parking lots. This goes back to the Irish immigrations. Mm-hmm. This goes back as far as we've had immigrants. There has been this drumbeat of they're coming to take our jobs. And you can research it. I mean, it's true. Mm-hmm. You can take, and if you just change the word Irish to Mexican, you can take stories from 1910 and they look just fine in a 2008 newspaper every time, because there's a fear of immigration. We're a nation built on immigration. Well, we don't need immigrants anymore, I'm told. I'm told that we don't have factory jobs, so we don't need low-skilled labor. We don't need that kind of thing. We're a consumer society now. Everybody works at Starbucks. We don't need anybody to come in to do these jobs that nobody wants to do. But honestly, we're one of the few industrialized nations that still has a growing population. Everyone else is shrinking. Japan is shrinking. Most of Western Europe is shrinking in population. And here we are. We're still growing. We're vibrant. We're young. We're moving forward. And how are we going to get immigrants instead of just migrants? How are we going to get people who come to this country and adopt the American ethos to become Americans?
Exactly. And you know, that's a good point that you brought up, and you brought it up in the first half. And maybe we should talk a little bit about the difference of immigrating and migrating, because we are talking, you know, when we're hearing it all over the news, it's sort of one-sided.
Yeah.
Really. Well, what is your take on that?
My take is that an immigrant leaves their former allegiance to their country and adopts a new nation who they come to be a part of what they see as a better way of life. Does that mean that you abandon your entire culture? Not at all. You bring it with you. But you adopt the mores and ethos of the culture that you're emigrating to. And that's very important, because when I was in school, they started changing over from calling America the melting pot to calling America a salad bowl. All these different parts together that when mixed together, each an individual bit, when mixed together, make a greater whole. I don't think that that's really true. And I don't think that America is really a melting pot where you put in, you know, your lead and your paraffin and your antimony, and then you melt it all down and it becomes a homogeneous mass. I think America is more like beef stew.
Okay.
When you take a ladle full of beef stew, can you identify the different parts, like the potatoes and the carrots and the peas
Absolutely.
And the beef?
Yeah.
Do they all have a similar flavor now?
Yes.
It's both. Mm-hmm. You still know who you were, but you are more of who you are, and you impart part of who you were to a cohesive whole that pulls together and creates something more than what it was. My best friend, his fiance, her parents immigrated here from part of the Soviet Union. So they were under communist rule. They remember what communism was like. They lived it. They came here. Now, they make some of the best Eastern European food I've ever had. I mean, it's amazing. Do they only eat hamburgers and hot dogs and New York style pizza now? Did they abandon? No, they didn't abandon who they were, but they are also some of the most freedom loving, pro-American people you'll ever meet, because they've lived a different life and they know that America is worth it. And that's what we want. We don't want migrants. We don't want people who are just coming here for a job to send money back home. We don't want people who are just here for an opportunity. We don't want people who are here for the welfare system. We don't want people who are here for what they can take. We want people who are coming for what they can give to this country, for what they can bring here with them to make better. And who is more likely to assimilate into this country and to adopt our standards and our values and our culture than children?
You have a great point, but one of the things I'm a little concerned about is when you're talking about the numbers. You know, we're saying that we've already seen like 50,000 kids this year currently, and next year we could get up to 90,000. What about the year after that? The year after that? What about when we start looking at these numbers?
And this is something that needs to be regulated. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be shut down. It doesn't need to be turned off. It doesn't need to undermine the American identity in the world as a superpower and a place of prosperity. But it does have to be regulated. And as there should be different cutoff points in age groups. I think the younger you are, the larger number we should allow in. because they're more malleable. These are the people that who are going to adopt America as their home.
Yeah, but that's also going to be the longer term that they would need care.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
So then we get into a question of who's going to be responsible for caring for these children who are, let's be honest, battered children. I don't care if they lived in a mansion in their home country and their parents sent them here on a, you know, Learjet. The act of leaving their home, leaving their family forever, is going to be emotionally traumatizing. So every single child that arrives on this border is emotionally traumatized to some degree. A lot of them severely, and not only emotionally, but also physically traumatized. So there is going to be a large degree of care that's going to be needed for these people. So who do you turn to? And this comes into the quintessential question of what do you believe about life? Do you turn to the government and say, government, take care of these children? Or do you turn to your faith-based, community-based, personal opportunities and say, we are, as a nation, are going to step up, not ask the government to do it, but step up and have places for these kids to go to take care of them?
You know, I'm just having a hard time seeing what that would look like. I mean, you know, I know that the local, you know, Christian churches have outreaches and things like that. But I mean, this sounds like a massive undertaking. I mean, I'm familiar with different programs and things. Maybe by the end of the show, we could create something like that.
Let's put this in perspective, though. Let's say that there's 100,000 children coming into the U.S. every year. That's higher than even the projections for next year. Okay, how many families? What percent of U.S. families would have to do something to help take care of these kids? Really? Think it'd be like 1% or 10% or 20%?
I don't know. What would that percent be?
Well, if a family took one child in as a foster child and provided all their needs, if one, you know, in that ratio, there's 300 million Americans. 100,000 kids is a drop in the bucket. There are so many people here. There are so many people who cannot have children. There are so many people who are adopting from foreign countries and looking for help.
But they're adopting, you know, these precious little infants and little babies. I mean, we're talking about, you know, these preteens and teens. I mean, heck, I've got some teenagers. I'm not sure I want any more, to be honest with you. But, you know, and what about the language barrier, religious, you know, and you know, and that's something else I'm very curious about is sort of what they're, you know, the majority of the ones that are coming across. One of the things that piques my interest is I would love to know what their religious background is. And if indeed they were coming across with, you know, strong Christian morals and beliefs, if they're actually making us stronger as a Christian country.
Well, I think that predominantly the countries that are coming from are Roman Catholic, so that you're going to see a larger mix of that. Now, how well trained they were, how fervent they are, who can say? But the culture that they come from is going to be predominantly Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. They'll identify as Roman Catholic, and they'll have a basic understanding of Roman Catholic belief and doctrine. So that's kind of the framework that'll be worked with. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. You know, at least that there's some framework to work with, and whether they come to embrace that religion in later life, or if they choose some other religion, or if they choose no religion, doesn't really matter. The important thing is that these are people who have the ability to learn and change and grow and adopt. And the younger you are, the higher the chance is that you're going to see America as your home rather than just as an opportunity.
Right. I mean, I think it does kind of matter as far as what, you know, the children coming across. Because, I mean, you know, one of the things, Doug, we talk about are all different types of scenarios where, I mean, even we as Americans could be put in this situation, you know, whether it's social or political or economic collapse, where we might be, you know, leaving and fleeing the United States. You know, one of the things, too, you know, one of the things we don't really talk too much about is just religious war. And, if it came down to that, I mean, you know, if we had people on our side coming over, and, you know, I speak as a Christian, obviously, as opposed to, you know, our opponents, then I think it makes us stronger as a country.
I think that's a hard topic to pin down as an American, because we are really a secular society at this point. I mean, we look at things not in as, you know, us versus them religiously. We look at us versus them politically or economically. Right. And I know that this is kind of a touchy topic to be on, but I think that it's worth exploring. When we come back from our commercial break, let's talk about religious war and jihad in the 21st century and how that impacts immigration.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. Just before we took our break, Amy and I were talking about religious war and how that impacts the way that we're looking at immigration. Amy had kind of postulated that by having people who have a Judeo-Christian ethic coming into the country, that it helps strengthen our ethos. And I turned around and said basically that America is really no longer a Christian nation. We are a secular nation. There are so many diverse opinions and diverse cultures that have come here that it's hard to say any one religious platform that we can get a majority to agree on. And should we be orchestrating to change that? Well, you know, from my Christian perspective as a believer, I believe that we should be proselytizing everybody, because I believe that the Christian doctrine is the way, the truth, and the life, and that's what it is. So I believe in changing people's hearts and minds. But I also accept that there are some people who have as fervent beliefs of different persuasions as I do for mine, and that we can all work together. And I think that is the best way to look at it, is that we are all human beings, and if we have a difference of opinion on a religion, and we can at least find common ground socially or economically, if not religiously, to be able to pull together and to have a cohesive whole to get things done. Now, there are some sects or factions that do not seem to hold to that belief, that it's converted at the edge of a sword. And we are seeing more and more of our military resources drawn into the Middle East to battle with Islamic extremism, as we talk about ISIS and some of these other groups that are militantly overthrowing and taking charge of countries that do not have a theory of secularism that they can work within. And Does having more immigrants from Central America that has a similar perspective or objective view of life help strengthen us, or does it make us a bigger target, that we are becoming more and more politically divided? If we were to have a larger sect of say Sunni Muslims in this country to create a cohesive voting bloc that was still secular but no longer, you know, Judeo-Christian, would that ease it and be able to say that we are really a you know, diverse group of people coming to an opinion rather than just trying to force Judeo-Christian ethics on somebody? Would that change the perspective coming out of groups like ISIS? Probably not, but does that strengthen us? I know, Amy, you said that bringing in more Roman Catholics would strengthen us, but wouldn't bringing in more Shiites or more Sunnis or more people, anybody who has a secular mentality of we can get along even if we disagree, wouldn't that strengthen us as well?
Possibly.
It's a very difficult prospect to really get into what makes us the best whole. And I think that what makes us the best whole are people who want to be here. And this is the biggest problem that I have with America today, is that our citizens, the people who have been born here, the people who are bred here, the people who can tie their history back to not only World War II, where their grandfathers fought, but to the Civil War, where their great-grandfathers fought, and to the Revolutionary War, where their great-great-great-grandfathers fought, those people are sitting around apathetic, not voting, not getting out, not being active, not trying to help anybody, just watching TV and sitting on their couch doing nothing. And here you have immigrants who are risking their very lives to get to this country for the chance to have a minimum wage job here, to be able to have more than what they had in their hovel back in the old country. And they are fighting and dying and trying and striving for this country. And they are coming here not for something, but for an idea that America is. And that's why they put their children through this, is because they have a belief in what the American ideal, that our own citizens no longer feel, that they can no longer be involved in, that they're no longer a part of. They sit and they watch and they curse America. And instead of trying to make the country better, instead of trying to fight for it, instead of trying to save it, they do nothing. And the immigrants come in and America is being remade. It's being remade in this very instant. I think that there is a political party right now that's hoping that more immigration will solidify their base. There's a political party right now that's trying to force immigration as an issue, saying that it's undermining our culture, when in reality, both political parties are going to realize sooner rather than later that the immigrants who are coming in are not going to fall into either of their categories. They are going to be looking for the America that they believed in when they came. And they're going to start getting active to change it. And the only way that they can get active to change it, because they don't have voting rights and they don't have the ability to act within the system, is outside the system. And that's when it gets exciting. When you have enough people here who came looking for an ideal, looking for freedom, looking for the ability to open their own store, to have their own job, to provide for their own family, and they see an oppressive government stepping in and saying, no, you can't do that. We're going to arrest you. We're going to detain you. We're going to send you away from your home that you've adopted now at a moment's notice. When they see that, they're going to rise up and say, no more. We're a part of this country. We're here. We're not leaving. And then what happens?
But what if it flips around to the other side, though, Doug? What if, you know, they come here with that hope and the dream and the fight and the strive, but what if when they get here, they're given handouts, and then all of a sudden it turns into entitlement? And then, you know, the people that come here looking to work and just happy to have the minimum wage paying job, and they're happy to work, and but what if what about when it turns into entitlement? And their children, because these, you know, the teenagers that are going to come over here, it's not going to be long until they marry and have kids of their own. Mm-hmm. And these children are given handouts. And I mean, how do we fix that?
Well, you just look back at ancient Rome. There comes a point in every democracy when the majority realizes that it can vote itself largesse, and at which point it fails. We have checks and balances in place that are supposed to keep that from happening, to keep us from becoming an entitlement society, but it's already too late in some ways. I think that most Americans are becoming entitled to things that they have no entitlement to. And the reason that they're so complacent is because they have there's no fire, there's no need to strive. But I don't think that somebody who's willing to risk their very lives and their children's lives to get somewhere, I don't think that they can be bought off with just some welfare stamps. I think that there is a fire and a passion and a strength of character in somebody who's willing to risk everything and sojourn to another place looking for a better life that can't be bought off with such cheap trinkets as what a government can provide.
Well, that's one of those things. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see what happens.
But if I'm right, let's just hope for a second that I am right and that you're
yes, let's hope.
How do you capitalize on that? What is the correct course of action? If you really believe that these people are coming here not for handouts, but for a better way of life, shouldn't we be reaching out to them? Aren't these the people who, I mean, we talk about prepping. We talk about having groups come together to get through the tough times. Who better to have as part of your group than somebody who has traveled the long and dusty road to get here, who have seen those dangers and the tragedies and all of the evil that can be in getting from one place to another? If we had a true societal collapse and you had to get from Atlanta to Florida or Louisiana or somewhere else that where you had to go to for family reasons or for resource reasons or for any reason, who better to help you get through it than somebody who came here through Mexico? These are people who have valuable skill sets. These are people who have knowledge of how to live without electricity, of how to make do in ways that we don't live in this country anymore. And they have knowledge that is untapped. They have resolve that has been tested and proved by fire. And yet we look down on them? Is that really what kind of people we've become? That people who strive and fight and try and work, we're looked down upon as second-class citizens or worse?
Well, I tell you what, Doug, that's a great point. And what we're going to do is take a quick commercial break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about you know, because we do talk about the whole emergency preparedness aspect. Let's kind of turn the page a little bit and talk a little bit about if it were us, what would happen if we were the immigrants or the migrants.
And the True Prep product of the week, of
course.
That's
right. Well, we'll talk about that. So you guys stick with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. When we took our commercial break, Amy had talked about, let's discuss what if this were us. And I think that that brings it back home to kind of the emergency survival context that is the backbone of our show. We look at these things happening in other countries, but it could just as well happen here. If we had a violent social, economic, political collapse, if there was a revolution or something, I think that parents all over, when faced with starvation, faced with war, faced with famine, would be taking their kids and trying to get them to a place of safety, whether that would be Canada or Alaska or even maybe Australia. Now, talking about a long voyage, but there will be resources available to get children out of harm's way. And we saw this in World War II as well, during the Battle of Britain when it was being bombed. Children were sent out to the countryside to stay with complete strangers, which is kind of the premise of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, if you've ever read the C.S. Lewis book.
I mean, stuff.
We see, and also Bedknobs and Broomsticks from Disney, a complete opposite end of the spectrum from Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But as we look at history and current realities, is parents try to get their children to a place of safety, even if they cannot go themselves. And I could see this sort of same migrant or immigrant caste taking off in America with enough pressure, either social, economically, or politically.
So where would you go, Doug? What would be your first?
Well, I actually went to Alaska when I was going to try to preserve my family. That's where I headed for, and found that life there was no better than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. The truth is, and this is what it goes against human nature, because we have a fight or flight response built into us. But the truth is, there is nowhere to run. There is nowhere that's going to be better than your own home. There's nowhere that's better than your own family. And you may think that you can take off and go to a different place and change your problems, but you never can.
And Doug, we're spoiled rotten. When we think of taking off and going somewhere else, I mean, the first thing we kind of visualize is vacation. You know, I'm thinking, I'd like to go to Scotland because I love the accent and the kilts. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Everyone loves
eating,
a kilt.
Yeah, eating haggis.
Yeah, I like
stuff.
Haggis.
Sure, it's good.
I'm hungry, actually.
Oh. You didn't have breakfast?
I haven't had breakfast, no. Okay. It's been one of those days. I haven't had lunch. As soon as we get done here, it'll be 6 o'clock, and I can go have something nice for dinner, though.
Well, there you go.
It's been a long Saturday.
It sounds like it.
Yes.
Holy cow.
But anyway, yes, there are some stimulus that causes people to want to flee, but I don't think that that's necessarily the best answer.
Right. Yeah, and this, you know, when my husband, you know, this last election, you know, we have certain candidates that we're not so thrilled to see in office, and he was just storming through the house going, doggone it, if this next president, you know, we're heading to, I forget where he said we're going, but oh yeah, we were going to leave the United States.
And he was really that worked over over the Green Party taking over?
Yes, he was. It was crazy, but we didn't go anywhere. So
yeah, this is the problem with the two-party system, is that you're kind of left without a lot of ambiguity when you start to criticize, let's say, I don't know, the office of the president. There's only two places to go. those Green Party candidates, they always get me up in arms, I'm telling you. Ralph Nader.
We're going purple next, I think.
Ralph Nader, when he ran, man, I was just up in arms. If he got elected, I was moving to the Solomon Islands.
Okay.
Anyway,
sure.
But you know, in the midst of a collapse, I think that the better choice, instead of trying to send people away or run and hide, is to build and to try to come together as a group. And part of that goes into prepping, and that's why we talk about having you know food stored up and having safe water and having a way to defend yourself and even raising your own garden. And in the middle of a social collapse, those resources are going to give you the stability to be able to weather the storm. And that's one of the main things that we talk about. And the ability to raise your own garden during a crisis is extremely important. And I know that this week's True Prep Product of the Week is very timely here, because this book that we're going to be highlighting not only gives you the ability to grow better, more productive plants, but the book itself will help keep them safe from looters.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the product of the week is?
It is a new book in stock, ready to buy today at True Prep, called Liquid Gold, A Short History of Urine Use and the Safe Ways to Use It to Grow Plants.
Yes. By Carol Steinfield?
Correct. Right? Okay. Yes. And it has wonderful illustrations. The front cover, folks, you need to go to True Prep's website and see the front cover of this country gentleman standing behind a tree, pouring out his liquid gold onto his flower bed. It really is awe-inspiring.
It truly is.
And my suggestion is for everybody to do not only go buy this book to read it, but to have a couple of copies on hand to place strategically around the house. For instance, let's say that there was a roving band of looters that came to your house and broke into your pantry and saw all of your mason jars lined up with all of the things that you have canned over the last year. And they're going to steal your mason jars of fruit and vegetables and leave you with nothing. If this book was prominently displayed in the middle of your mason jars and they knew that you had used your own human urine to help grow these plants, I bet that they would leave them alone.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, Doug. But
the other thing is not only should you have one in the back room with the mason jars as a security measure, but it's wonderful bathroom reading.
Indeed.
And as bathroom indeed. Reading, you could actually leave it on your front porch.
Okay, now you're being silly. But Doug, truly, this book, although there's a little bit of silliness in here, believe it or not, this book has some really good information. We're talking about composting. And we're, you know, there's all kinds of things that you can compost, which is an amazing thing. You do not have, I mean, if we did not have, you know, the access to go to Pike's or, you know, where to get our fertilizer or you know, whatever, you know, all the chemicals that we spray to make these plants grow big and beautiful, wonderful. We have certain resources, and this, believe it or not, and as strange as it is truly a good resource.
Absolutely. I agree. And it is one that you take with you no matter where you go. So you'll have access to it even after the apocalypse. And with this book from True Prep that you can harvest its fullest potential.
Okay, so moving on.
That was the True Prep product of the week.
Yes.
And we are all very grateful for our sponsors, yes. Especially since they're probably dropping us today. folks, this has been, we try to have a little bit of fun and to bring some levity into dark topics. And I think that this kind of helped. When you go to True Prep, of course, you're looking at very serious topics. There's, you know, the possibility of disaster or everything from tornadoes and hurricanes to complete economic collapse or even zombies. And we're looking at these dark topics and trying to bring some levity into it. And I think that's why this is a perfect example of True Prep's ethos, that they believe in keeping a lighter tone with even such a dark topic as economic ruin. I would ask everyone to go ahead and check us out on our social media sites. We're on Twitter and Facebook. We have our website at www.readyradio.net, where you can listen to old shows or leave us a comment at info@readyradio.net through our email. If there's a topic that you'd like to hear on our shows, you know, send us an email. We'll be happy to respond to you either in private or on the air, whichever your preference is.
Yeah, that's right. And visit the people at True Prep, you know, because here's the thing. I mean, there are, you know, with Ready Radio, we do go over a bunch of different topics. You know, we do talk about different collapses that are possible. We talk about, you know, the electrical grid failure. We talk about different things that are possible. You know, and one of the things we didn't even really touch on is overpopulation. I mean, in different areas, too. I mean, that in itself, you know, can... bring on, well, I wouldn't say necessarily disasters, but it could be the onset of bad things to come. But, you know, there are so many different things and different topics, and there, this really is not black and white. There is so much gray area here. And when you are prepared for one thing, you're really, in essence, prepared for everything. I mean, unless you're preparing to, I guess, survive out on the sea. I don't know how that would work so much, but...
You know, we you're right. There's a whole bunch of different aspects of it. There's so much information that we have to get out, but it comes down to some very fundamental tenets that you can just hold in your heart, and those are do for yourself, don't rely on others, help others where you can, and try to be prepared. And I think that if you look at life through those lenses and those terms, that you'll be a more full person. You'll be a Jeffersonian person. You'll be the person that we all strive to be. You'll be a real American, not an American like we have the reputation for around the world, but like what we should be.
Right. And if, you know, if we could have Jefferson himself be one of our guests, I really wonder what his, you know, his take would be on on you know, the immigration that's happening today?
That is a good question. I bet if you checked out the Thomas Jefferson Hour, that they've got a recent show that has a lot of Jefferson's perspectives through Mr. Clay Jenkinson. They're a fantastic group, and another podcast other than ours that's very worth listening to. So I really appreciate everybody tuning in. Do check out True Prep. Take a moment to look at their new book that we highlighted this week. Amy, you know, there's one thing that I did want to ask you. Over and over again throughout the show, you've talked about canned goods, you know, like Del Monte and Kroger canned corn and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You always refer to the liquid in there as liquid gold.
Oh,
does that have
gracious.
Any
no.
Does that have any connection with this book? Or?
No. Yeah, it really doesn't. No. No, that's completely different.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. There is a liquid inside your canned goods, which is basically water. You can drain those to cook your rice or something like that. But no, you know what? I'll tell you what, listeners, please check out the book Liquid Gold. It's completely different. It's an eye opener. It's got some really great information.
Folks, don't let the liquid gold go down your back and someone tell you it's raining. This has been Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town. We'll be back next week. I hope you all have a good week.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com or visit a True Prep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.